Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Cross-Cultural Studies Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Correct. Cross-Cultural Studies.
Is that a new department?
No. It's my way of warning you that I'm about to insult a couple of cultural groups all at once.
Okay.
But it's not me. No, I mean, I'm just reading from, evidently these are excerpts from a book from a guy named David Bader. It's a clever idea. I mean, everyone is familiar with the Japanese poetic haiku.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book entitled Haikus for Jews. And I have checked with the scholar of the Talmud here at Car Talk Plaza, Doug Berman. He says not a word of this is untrue, at least as far as he knows. Okay, here, I'll give you a little taste of these. Today I am a man. On Monday I return to the seventh grade. Testing the warm milk on her wrist, she beams. Nice. But her son is 40. Lovely nose ring. Excuse me while I put my head in the oven. This is good. After the warm rain, the sweet scent of camellias. Did you wipe your feet? I like this one. Left the door open for the prophet Elijah. Now the cat is gone. Is one Nobel Prize too much to ask from a child after all I've done? This is not just Jewish mothers.
Oh, no, no. This is Italian mothers, too.
Oh. Is one Nobel Prize too much to ask?
Well, look, if you've had enough bad poetry and you're ready for some bad car advice, would it kill you to call once in a while? Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Andrew from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Mount Pleasant.
Yes. A lovely town.
Well, sounds rather pleasant.
Well, South Carolina might have among the most perfect temperatures in the country.
Mm-hmm.
A brochure I got from some retirement community. I was researching this with my brother, of course. in South Carolina said, winter passes quietly and unnoticed.
Yeah.
Just like my brother. He's going quietly. Anyway, Andrew, what's...
Do they call you Andrew, Drew, Andy? What?
Well, Andy or Andrew.
Okay.
I respond to either one of those,
what's
I guess.
What's up?
Well, I have a 97 Ford Escort and a two-part question, really. Number one, do I need to replace the clutch?
No, you don't have to replace it.
You don't?
How do we know? 97. How many miles on it?
About 65,000.
So what makes you think that you might want to replace the clutch? This just came to you like in a dream?
No. It came to me off the expressway. Actually, when, the engine is cold, the clutch works fine. But then when the engine gets hot, say you come off the expressway after driving for a half hour or something, it feels like the clutch isn't catching. You know, basically you can feel, as your foot has come off the clutch, you can feel the engine rev up as you give it some gas, but you don't feel it, you know, propel the car any faster.
That's good. That's a good test, isn't it?
Has anyone else driven this beside you?
Well, it's my wife's car primarily.
Does she drive mostly around town or on the highway?
Mostly around town.
Yeah, you need a clutch.
You think I do?
Yeah.
Well, can I replace it myself?
Oh.
Because, as my wife will tell you, I am the cheapest man on the face of the earth.
This may explain, rather, why you bought an Escort to begin with.
Yes, that has
with
something to do with
it. With a stick shift. Were you the one who forced her to drive a stick shift car against her wishes?
No, she had this car when we came into the marriage.
Oh, it was her car.
It's her car.
Oh, so she's a cheapskate too.
Well, she gets
a match
it from
made
me.
In heaven.
No, and we're also thinking of getting rid of the car in about 8 months or so. Can I replace it myself, save some money, such that when we sell it, we don't get hammered on the fact that a clutch needs to be replaced?
Do you have an assistant, a ready assistant?
Yes, I will. I have at least one ready assistant.
Oh, good. Have you ever done anything like this? Have you ever built a small nuclear power plant in the backyard?
Out of wood?
Not in the backyard, but you might not believe this. Well, I am a nuclear engineer.
Oh, you are?
Get out.
Then you probably can't do it.
Ah!
Well, because engineers don't know squat about how to do anything.
Yeah, the guys that work for me say the same thing.
Over the years, I've had a few MIT would-be engineers, in other words, students who are like in their junior year of mechanical engineering, come to the shop for summer employment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hopeless, right?
It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty sad that they're designing the things that they can't take apart. Or they can't even recognize. Oh, yeah, I designed one of those. Was that what it looks like?
Hey, well, you know.
Anyway.
What does it do?
Do you have tools?
Well, that wasn't true of Tony Pruszynski, though.
No.
Tony was an MIT student, and yet he could build a nuclear reactor in his backyard.
He has.
He probably got one.
One now. Anyway, do you have tools, Andrew?
I have an auto hobby shop that I can go use here at the Navy base.
Oh, so you should definitely do it, because there'll be somebody there who will take pity on you and help you.
That's a good thought.
Yeah, I mean, in this thing, it's pretty simple. You take out the two axles, and you take the transaxle out.
Piece of cake.
It's a piece of cake, and with any luck, you'll be done on a week after a weekend or two or three.
Four.
Good luck, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you later. Bye-bye.
It's a nice job, though. I mean, I did a clutch in my driveway. I didn't even have one of these little shops like he's got.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You ever finish?
No. And my 15-year-old daughter helped me do it.
She was only 12 at the time.
She was.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Susan in Bettendorf, Iowa.
Hi, Susan, in Bettendorf, Iowa, huh?
Yeah, right next to Davenport.
She's
Iowa.
What's going on in Bettendorf? Not that I never heard of it before, but that doesn't mean much.
Oh, we moved here from Chicago about 10 years ago.
Why?
Yeah, we've been asking ourselves that. No. No, it's a nice state, you know, but the whole state doesn't have the population of Chicago alone.
Wow. But Bettendorf is like a little town.
Well, it is. It's right smack dab next to Davenport. It's like a little suburb.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
A
suburb of a place we never heard of.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Susan, what's up?
We've got an 85 old Cutlass Sierra. And this isn't really a technical question. This is more cosmetic.
Yeah.
You know the material that lines the inside of the hood of your car?
Yeah, it's insulation. It's like fiberglass insulation.
This is the actual material.
This is under the hood or under the roof?
Under the roof.
Oh,
inside the car.
You said under the hood.
I thought you said.
To me, that's the hood.
That's the roof. The hood is that thing in front where the engine is.
Well, you check the oil. You check the oil. So the headliner is coming down.
It's like these billowing masses. You sit down in the car, and it's literally a pain in the neck because you keep ducking because this stuff hits you on the top of the head all the time.
Yeah.
And this Andrew that before me said that he's cheap. Well, he's not. He hasn't got anything on my husband.
he doesn't.
Who is like 6 foot tall and bohemian, and so he's so cheap he doesn't want to take it anywhere to have it fixed.
Yeah.
Oh, we got another one of these on our hands?
Well, he may be the problem. Maybe his head was bouncing up against the headliner, and that's why it's falling down. Headliners are a mystery because whatever is holding them up there, or was holding them up there, is invisible because it's behind there.
Yeah, and I don't want to cut into this material
exactly.
To smear something up there to make it adhere again.
Well, you're going to have to.
Oh, that's what I was wondering.
Unless you want to attack it from the other side.
What, the outside of the car?
Drill a hole in the roof.
And then put a rubber stopper
Rubber stopper, a cork.
Put a cork in it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have to get behind it. Unless you want to prop up a 2x4 on the seat. But that's bogus.
Oh.
Not much is going to work. Is the thin material actually separated from the padding?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But the other material, that is the padding that is between the cloth and the metal of the roof, that's still in place as far as you can tell.
As far as I can tell, yeah.
You may have to make a tiny hole and look in.
Oh.
But here's what I'd recommend. That you do punch a little hole in there.
Uh-huh.
And you buy a can of spray contact cement, if there is such a thing, or spray adhesive. And what you're going to do is you're going to try, you may have to make a couple of little incisions.
Okay.
So you're going to try to spray the what's stuck to the roof. And you're going to try to spray the fabric that's hanging down in front of your face.
Okay.
And after
and then you're going to prop it up with something.
I think if you do it right, if you let this stuff dry and then you put the two pieces together, it will stick forever.
Oh.
Now, you may have to prop it up with a couple of bales of hay or something.
Okay, that might work.
They got them in their front lawn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
This is corn country.
It is. So, so it may take a few corn stalks to hold this thing up. But I think that's your only hope. The alternative is to rip the thing out.
Oh, and put all new in.
Well, or have no headliner. You could rug it.
Oh, that'd be pretty ugly.
Oh, you could paint it. You could wallpaper it, for that matter.
No, shag carpeting.
Oh.
But try this. It'll probably work.
Okay.
Give it a shot, and if not, call back next week, and we'll tell you how to replace the clutch.
Yeah, right.
See you, Susan.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Lydia from Washington, D.C.
Lydia. What an interesting name.
Yeah? Well, actually, I have a bet with somebody. I thought that you would sing the Groucho Marx song.
Oh, of course we would do that. Lydia, oh, Lydia, that encyclopedia. Lydia, the tattooed lady.
I have a niece named Lydia.
No kidding!
I guess you both have a niece named Lydia.
No, we don't. Because she happens to be Tom's daughter.
Oh, well, there you go.
That would explain it.
I thought she was your daughter. Where'd you say you were from, Lydia?
I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Are you a lawyer or a politician?
Actually, I work at the Smithsonian and I'm a graduate student.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, a graduate student in art history.
Yes, which actually brings me to my question. I'm working on an exhibit right now called America on the Move, and I've decided that since I'm doing this whole thing on transportation and we have a piece of Route 66, that the summer after I finish, I want to do a kind of a Thelma and Louise thing, take a tour across the country, and without the blood and carnage, of course. I don't want to, like, kill anybody. but,
unless they get in your way.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's why I need to call you guys.
Yeah, I don't want to kill anybody unless I really have to.
So I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Okay.
So I'm trying to think of what kind of car I want to buy, because I want to buy a cool car. I want to buy something like the one that Thelma Louise was driving, you know, convertible or older car.
Oh, yeah.
And I also want to be able to work on it myself.
Yeah.
If I need to. So I wanted to get your opinion on this. If you had the opportunity to drive cross-country for a summer, what car would you want?
I would want a 70s Chevrolet.
Okay, 70s Chevrolet.
Because a 70s Chevrolet, the only thing you'd be missing is an airbag.
Okay.
But you would have pretty much all of the other technological advancements made since the turn of the century that last time.
Okay. So like air conditioning and so forth.
You could have air conditioning. You could have an 8-track tape player.
Oh, God.
And you could have power brakes, power steering, all that stuff.
Okay.
And you would have seat belts, and you wouldn't have an airbag, but you might not need one because the thing would weigh 5,000 pounds.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would shoot for like a 72 Chevy Caprice Classic convertible.
Ooh.
I happen to have one for sale.
Well, that was my other question.
No, I don't have one for sale. Here's what you do.
Okay.
You go to Hemmings Motor News.
Hemmings.
Okay. It's a publication you can get on your newsstand, or you can go online.
Okay.
And you will find a listing of every used car that's more than 50 years old in the entire world.
Uh-huh.
And you will find yourself a nice 70s Chevy.
Okay.
And you'll find someone in Washington, D.C. who just finished rebuilding everything, and he's a philanthropist, and he wants to give it away to some struggling grad student.
Hey, hopefully he's heard this show. That
Your future is assured.
And that's it. The other advantage of this is that when you go across the country, you got a better shot of someone being able to fix this.
Exactly.
Than just about anything else.
Right. And if I don't get the philanthropic gentleman, what would you say is the price range that would probably go for?
You could get one of these cars, I would say, in great condition for $5,000 to $10,000.
Not if it's convertible.
Yeah.
If it's convertible, add 5 to 10.
Well, you can get, you have to sacrifice.
Do you want the top to go up and down, or you're willing to accept when it's just down?
Well, I mean, the sacrifice you might have to make is beauty.
Okay.
So, and I would certainly make that sacrifice.
Sure.
I mean, I would sacrifice rust for money.
Okay.
Your wife made exactly that same decision some years ago. Well, Lydia, have a wonderful trip.
Thank you very much.
And secondly, you've got to stay in touch with us. We want to know where and how you broke down.
Oh, definitely.
And
yeah.
We want to know all the details, so we may have to even chronicle your trip on our website.
I would love that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would be great.
And just for my own benefit, my own edification, what does a graduate in art history write for a dissertation?
Well, actually, it's history, not art history.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's history.
Yes. My dissertation is I'm looking at women, African-American women in the 68 Olympics. You know, the one where they raised their fist
and said, we're mad. Sure.
Well, I want to know what happened with the women.
Because it was the guys who got all the publicity.
Exactly. So I'll keep you apprised of that as well.
Terrific. Keep us posted.
Great.
Have a nice trip.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Take care.
All right, Tommy, do you remember anything about last week's Puzzler?
You want the honest answer? I have no idea.
Well, it takes place in Borneo, and it involves sedated pigs, dead chickens, and a sparrow.
Sounds like Christmas dinner. at your house.
We'll be back in a minute.
Sedated pigs.
And even though sound waves plunge into deep self-loathing whenever they have to carry us saying it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's Puzzler.
But first, the question.
Oh, yeah.
The sparrow. It's coming back to me. Is there a big truck involved in a bridge?
Yeah. You remember the story of the Bridge of San Luis Rey by Thornton Wilder?
I've read it.
You read it. When did you read it?
A couple of years ago.
No, you read it when he first wrote it in 1937.
I read the galley proofs.
Well, this is the story of the Bridge of Tom and Ray. In Borneo, there's a bridge connecting two islands that's constructed of bamboo lashed together with hemp. It's been used for hundreds of years. Pedestrian traffic and vehicular traffic move in both directions, and the bridge is 4 miles long.
I'm with you. I can see it now.
Is the old picture painted?
I can see 4 miles of hemp holding up people and things.
And
cars.
Bamboo.
Bamboo, yeah.
And the bridge has a weight limit of 20 tons. So one day a truck pulls up to the bridge and the officials stop him and say, we have to weigh you because it looks like it's going to be close to the weight limit. So he drives onto the scale and the truck is full of sedated pigs, pig iron, and dead chickens. With the driver in the truck, it weighs exactly 20 tons.
Man.
What are the chances of that?
What are the chances?
So the guy at the other end of the bridge gets the signal. He weighs all the other traffic off the bridge. Clearly, if the weight limit's 20 tons, they can't allow anyone else on the bridge.
No.
So now the bridge is empty, and this fellow is allowed to drive across. As he is crossing the bridge, a sparrow begins to follow alongside.
No! What are the chances of that?
Then it begins to hover over the truck, flapping his wings. And just when he's a little beyond
this sparrow hasn't had, like, chili for lunch.
May have. And just when he's a little beyond the halfway point on the bridge, the sparrow gets ready to land and does land on the truck. What does the driver do to keep the truck and the sedated pigs and the dead chickens from plunging into
the abyss?
The abyss, or the 4 feet of water that's below the over the, under the bridge.
Wow. What a great question.
Well,
what does he do?
What does he do?
Not what happens, but what does the driver do?
Or what can he do? Well,
what can he do?
He could do a lot of things. For example, figuring that his shoe weighs more than a sparrow.
He could throw a shoe out.
He could throw a shoe out the window.
Yeah.
Or he could jettison something else. But he needn't do anything.
Wow.
Trick question. What does he do? He does nothing. Because in driving from the beginning of the bridge to the halfway point, a 20-ton truck is going to what? Consume fuel.
Oh.
And it'll easily consume an amount of fuel that's greater than the weight of the sparrow. So when the sparrow lands on the truck, nothing happens.
Oh, man.
Do we have a winner?
And you know what I would have done? I would have been already diving out the truck window into the abyss.
Exactly.
Oh, man. The winner is Dave May from Cedar Falls, Iowa, and for having his correct answer selected at random from the thousands of correct answers that we got. Dave is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, which is at cartalk.com. And with the $26, he can get our Father's CD collection just in time for Father's Day. Why you should never listen to your father when it comes to cars. You have to hurry, though. We only have a few hundred million of these sitting in the basement.
Well, anyway, we'll have a new... I'm trying to decide what kind of puzzle to use. I have a plethora of putrid... And I've used a couple of good ones in a row here.
Yeah.
I think it's time to maybe mix in a...
I think it might be.
A stinko
one. No, you've had a... You are definitely on a high roll. If you had another good one, you would be setting a precedent which you would never be able
to... Unattainable. You think so?
Okay, I think you should choose from
putrid.
The plethora of putrids.
So we will have a semi-putrid automotive...
Semi? Oh, we got to work your way down.
Folkloric and historic... puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show.
Great.
So stay tuned for that. It's I'll give you a little more of a hint. It's a what am I puzzler.
I know what it is.
Wow, you're clairvoyant.
No, stop calling me Claire.
In the meantime, you can call us and ask us questions about your car. The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm Christina, and I just moved here with my husband. Here is North Carolina at Heavenly Mountain from California, and we have a 96 Toyota Land Cruiser.
Wait a minute, California, so that means you spell Christina with a K?
No, C-H.
C-H.
Yeah.
And you live on Heavenly Mountain?
Heavenly Mountain in North Carolina.
I mean, could there be a better place on Earth?
Oh, God, no, and today is the singularly most beautiful day I've ever had in my life.
How long have you been there? A week?
just pulled in last night.
No.
Really, it's the most singularly beautiful day
ever.
Wow, I mean, that's quite a thing.
I thought about that earlier driving around. First of all, we had the Blue Ridge Parkway, and there are no commercial vehicles and no signs.
Oh, the Blue Ridge Parkway is beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Isn't it?
And the clouds are these big white clouds, and the wind is blowing, and the cows are out, and the grass is green, and the wind's going through. It's just gorgeous. It's heavenly.
Why did you move from California to North Carolina?
To be at Heavenly Mountain.
Excellent idea.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a good idea to me.
They're the oldest mountains in the world, and some of these roads are the oldest probably ever made.
Who told you that? Carl Sagan?
You know.
The oldest mountains in the world.
Oldest mountains in the world, they are.
Not that it really matters.
Yeah, but says who?
That's very old. And the second oldest river in the world is called the New River.
The New River, a good name.
Yeah.
That's like the guy who's taking this course about geology and stuff, and the teacher says, does anyone know how old the Amazon River is? And the guy in the back raises his hand, and he says, yes, sir, I know. It's 1,003,000,000 years old. Teacher says, how did you come up with that number? He says, well, I flunked this course the last time I took it 3 years ago,
right.
At which time the teacher said it was 1,000,000,000 years old.
There you go.
That's what these mountains are.
So anyway, Christina, what are you driving?
So So we're driving a 96 Toyota Land Cruiser, which you think would be perfect for here.
But yeah.
The roads are narrow because they were made when the cars weren't so big.
Good.
And it's pretty precision driving on these mountain roads. I'm telling you, there's no room for error.
Yes, I know.
First, we learned you have to tie everything down in the car or it comes and hits you. And the second thing that happened is on a left curve, the doors would all unlock on their own. And then...
Unlock but not open.
Yes, unlock. And then the light overhead, the inside light, started to flash on these curves. Not all the time. None of this happens all the time.
So right.
You can't, like, gear up for it.
Right.
And one night parked, we don't have a sensor alarm. The alarm went off just on its own. No wind, no...
The car was parked outside.
Parked outside, yeah.
Hmm. All right.
Does anyone screen these calls? Come on, what is this?
Well, let's go
like
back
it.
To let you say on left-hand turns.
Yeah, left curves.
Left curves.
Curves, yeah.
The doors will unlock.
Yeah.
If you're driving this thing and you were to open the door, let's say the doors were all locked while you're driving. If you were to open the door, would the other doors automatically unlock, or does that you have to unlock them manually?
No, they all unlock.
Yeah.
When you stop the car with all the doors locked, how do you get out? If you just open one of the doors?
Well, if you stop the car and turn it off, they unlock. But if you don't turn it off, you have to push the button that unlocks, and they all unlock.
They all unlock. Okay, so what's happening is, somehow or another, one of the passenger doors...
Passenger door.
Is loose. Yeah, it's not latched properly.
Oh.
And as a result of that, it's causing the light to flicker, and it's also making the doors open up because it's like you opened the door while you were driving.
Try this.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what you do.
Okay.
You start up the car.
Yeah.
You have a second key, right? So you can lock you can close the door, leave the engine running.
Yeah.
And get out. So now everything's locked.
All right, now go in the house and put on a pot of coffee. Because this may take time.
Then you go around to the passenger side doors.
Yeah.
And you pull on one of them.
How about if I stay in the car and my husband does that?
Your husband? You have a husband?
Yeah.
You could do that.
Sure, let him do it.
You know, we shipped it across country, so maybe the door did get loose when it was...
Or this could have fallen off the truck in, like, you know...
Yeah. Arizona.
No, it was inside one of those big trucks.
The whole, I bet either that or they took it out and drove it around a little bit. Something happened.
It's a classic FOT situation.
Okay.
Fell off truck.
Yeah. But I suspect that even the alarm going on might be associated with this, too. Everything is tied in together.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, and I'm sure that if you went to your dealer.
Yeah.
And explained to them what you've told us and what we told you.
Yeah.
And asked them to... check the passenger side doors for tightness or whatever.
Yeah.
They might be able to find it.
Oh,
may be able to just adjust the latches on those doors and solve your problem. I suspect it's the passenger front door.
Oh.
I do, too.
Because no one's ever used the other door.
I agree with that. Not that. I mean, I had no reason for thinking it. I just felt it.
Oh, good. See you, Christina.
I think you're right. Thanks so much.
Hey, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey, you want to hear some mail?
If I have to.
We've all been interviewed for jobs, and we've all spent most of those interviews thinking about what not to do. You don't bite your nails, you don't fidget, you don't belch, all that stuff. Some job applicants go light years beyond this. Here is a survey of top personnel executives of the 100 top major American corporations who are asked for stories of unusual behavior by job applicants. And here are some. A balding candidate abruptly excused himself and returned to the office a few minutes later wearing a hairpiece.
Wanted to make a good first impression.
Right. During the interview, an alarm clock went off from inside the candidate's briefcase. He took it out, shut it off, apologized, and said he had to leave. He was going to be late for another interview. He asked who the lovely babe was, pointing to the picture on my desk. When I said it was my wife, he asked if she was home now and wanted my phone number. I called security. That's it. I didn't do any of these things myself.
Of course not.
But I didn't get any jobs that I ever interviewed for anyway.
They came looking for you, right? If you have a stack of old papers that are cluttering up your office or your basement, drop them in an envelope and send them to my brother. He reads everything. And who knows? He might even find something amusing in there. So just address it to Mail for Tommy, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Ma, 02238, or you can email him from cartalk.com. Of course, if you have a car question, you can call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2782-2782-55. Hike! Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Matt in Minneapolis.
Hi,
hey,
Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay, thanks.
What's going on?
Well, I got a 95 Honda Accord. It's got leather interior, and this is key to the story. I mean,
wow.
I'm not a leather guy, but I had a four-year-old kid at the time, and I said, leather, indestructible. Good idea.
Leather's good.
How wrong I was.
Yeah.
So last week, I'm taking him to McDonald's. The car has been out in the sun for a long time, so the leather on the inside
Very
of the door
soft.
Where he sits,
yeah.
Really, really hot. So we get out of McDonald's. He puts his pop in the little plastic holder on the side of the door, and like three drops of the cold pop spill onto the hot leather. And I turn around, and it didn't actually burst into flames, but it was like this X-Files thing. It burnt. The leather burnt where the pop hit it.
What?
I mean, it turned brown. It puckered up. It's hard. It's crusty. It shrunk so much that it, like, pulled some of the seam away from where the leather meets the armrest.
What kind of a pop is this? I mean, this is like a
Sprite.
Soda pop.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez. I guess I won't be drinking that anymore.
Well, I made him drink the rest of the pop, but and he survived.
Gee, that's very, very strange. Boy, we need a leather expert or a soda pop expert. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, the only two things, there are three components in basic components in soda pop. One is
water.
Water. The other one is dissolved carbon dioxide.
And sugar.
And sugar. And the other ingredients are all insignificant, you know, yellow dye.
0.1% of 1%.
Yeah, they're all nothing. So it had to have been, I think, the sugar.
The sugar.
Sugar, I mean.
Sugar.
Yeah.
Could you cook sugar on hot leather?
Yeah.
Well, we know that water and leather don't cause any reaction.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The other two we don't know
Otherwise,
about.
Otherwise, cows would look awfully funny.
Maybe what you got is caramelized sugar.
Yes, I think so.
It doesn't come off, though. It actually burnt the leather.
Well, it didn't burn. I mean,
if we use the
scientific definition of burn... combination with oxygen to cause flame.
Right. No, you didn't get that.
Right.
But you did get some kind of a reaction, and I think the sugar just got fused into the pores of the leather.
How big? I mean, is it only a couple of dots that are there?
It hit the top part, the dark leather, and it sort of it was like somebody put their cigar out in it. It's big and crusty.
And then
it just dripped down the lighter leather, and right where it dripped, you know, 5-6 inches long, there's this brown streak.
Well, here's what you do. You're going to have to go to a detailer.
Right.
You know who that is, right?
Uh-huh.
These guys that, I mean, they must be used to this because kids spill stuff in cars all the time.
Right.
Yeah, well, I do like the caramelized sugar theory. So don't forget, though, we have the heat. We could have had an oxidation reaction in which we converted CO2
here it comes
to CO3.
Really?
And then we would with water we would have carbonic acid.
Yes.
Which would have burst into flame.
Yeah, I think you need to go to the local university and consult the chemistry department.
Well, we have a resident chemist. Right up the street here at the world's greatest university.
Jim Davis.
Jim Davis is our resident chemist. He answers all questions about chemistry.
We will pose this question to Jim.
And we will pose this to Jim. Because this is really interesting, Matt. Very interesting.
Yeah, in the meantime, get some seat covers.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Hey, thanks for calling, Matt.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
See you later.
Bye.
Okay, Tommy, it's time to take a short break so that stations can identify themselves.
And simultaneously deny any knowledge of how we managed to sneak onto their airwaves. Go to it, guys.
We'll be back in a minute.
A lady had a Volvo, motor car in town. Just so suddenly, the thing break down. She sent and called for Jamesy, the mechanic man. He
walking with a toolbox in his hand. And when he checked the compression, James, he started a ball. Lady, you need a complete overhaul. Your gas line plug up and your piston loose. And your carburetor ain't getting no juice. Your backseat bent up and your headlight low. And your oil pump ain't pumping no more.
And even though Terry Gross wonders if she could still fit into her TGI Fridays uniform whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and
The new
Puzzler.
Putrid. Semi-putrid.
Semi-putrid.
Puzzler.
Yeah.
Yeah. from the Putrid Collection, just like you got the Coin Collection, the String Collection, the Series.
Oh, yeah.
The String Series, oh, the
Coin
Series.
This is by far the Putrid Collection.
The Putrid Series.
Yeah, there's a whole wing devoted to the Putrid Collection.
I like it.
You know, cars have evolved a lot over the last 100 years, and they've been around about 100 years. Mm. And parts have changed composition over the years. For example, the wheels of cars used to be made out of wood, you know, wooden mm-hmm. spokes, and then they evolved into steel, and then now most wheels are made out of some kind of magnesium aluminum alloy, mm-hmm. okay?
Or cream cheese.
Or cream cheese. And dashboards used to be made out of wood.
Yeah.
Okay, and then they became made out of steel, and now they're made out of cream cheese.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do a little what am I, and I'm going to tell you what I used to be made out of.
I love it.
And you're going to tell me what I am.
It already is out of the realm of putrid because it's so clever. What am I?
What am I?
Go ahead.
In the early days of cars, I didn't even exist. When they saw a need for me, I was first made out of wood. Later on, when they discovered that that didn't work too well, I was made out of leather. Sometime later, I was made out of cotton.
Huh?
You with me?
Wow. Yeah.
Today, I am made out of a mixture of things, some of which are steel wool, iron, and bronze. What am I?
Who the hell knows?
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the back of an original oil on canvas Pablo Picasso, complete with authenticating documents, and send it to.
We haven't been getting any.
No,
of this
the
stuff.
Carpathian Elm Burl dining room set didn't,
never arrived.
Never showed.
Yeah.
Oh, Berman says that's what you think. Anyway, if you want, send all that to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, as always, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Carl.
Carl with a K.
No, with a C. Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from smoke-free Marblehead.
Marblehead, Massachusetts?
That's correct. Birthplace of the American Navy.
No, yeah. Really?
That's true. First ship commissioned by General George Washington was built in Marblehead.
What was he doing way out in Marblehead?
He got lost.
On Route 1A? You often wonder. I mean, even now, it takes an hour to get to Marblehead. It must have taken him a week to get there.
Anyway, Carl, what can we do for you?
Well, my daughter bought a 1994 Mazda B3000 pickup truck.
Yeah.
With about 100,000 miles on it. She drove from Boston to Colorado. She called me and said, Dad, there's something unusual about this truck. As I drove along, I had more gas than when I started. The gauge kept moving towards full.
Really?
And when I stopped to fill it up, when I topped it off, it read empty.
That's awesome.
Really?
I like that one.
So, but she must have started out with a full tank. Did it read empty then?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
No, I think it broke en route.
Well, I'll give you a little more history.
Yeah, please. We're going
to
need
it. When we went to the dealership and checked out the vehicle, they said there's two problems that we know of with the vehicle. It needs a new windshield, and it needs a new float in the gas tank.
Yeah, that's the sending unit.
And they said, we'll fix it. So we know that they went ahead and put in a new float.
Well, how do you know that?
Oh.
Actually, I trust them.
This is a dealership?
Yeah.
And you trust them?
Yes.
It's a cousin, huh?
Are you interested in a bridge? Interesting.
I suspect that the problem is not the sending unit, but something that would give you the same symptom, and that is a chafed wire. Between the sending unit and the gauge.
But see, what she described is kind of interesting because she said as she was driving, it gradually moved closer and closer to the full mark.
That's right. It's an inverse relationship.
See, and usually if you have like a chafed wire, it doesn't act like that.
No, it doesn't. It would shoot up usually.
It usually shoots to full. So
I'm going to my fallback position.
Wait a minute. You may have something, but we have to answer, how is it doing it gradually? Or we could throw it back to Carl and tell him he's a liar.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, we've done that before.
You know, he may be a follower of the old premise, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
I must admit that I do subscribe to that philosophy.
Yeah, as do we all.
But in this case, it doesn't apply.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to predict that the gauge is faulty.
However, you should question your daughter, of course you trust her. But she, too, may subscribe to the never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
He's a writer.
Yeah, there you go. And
so, I brag about her writing?
Yeah, of course you should.
Sure.
What does she write?
What does she write?
She's actually won national poetry slams. And
really?
Yeah.
Does she need an agent?
Are you volunteering?
My brother's always looking for work. Actually, my brother's wife is always looking for work for him.
Yeah, not for herself. No, but the truth of the matter is she may not have been quite straight or clear. We don't want to accuse her of anything, but she may have been trying to give you a good story. And if, in fact, you question her and she says, well, you're absolutely right. What it does is it doesn't creep up toward full. It's on full all the time. That still wouldn't explain why it went to empty when she filled the tank.
That's correct.
And she may say, well, it didn't really. And if she does answer that way to those two questions, then it is a chafed wire someplace. But let's assume that she's telling the truth, because women don't lie like guys do. And in which case, I agree with my brother. Not that we know of. That's right.
Yeah. Either they don't lie or they're really, really good at it. But I would use the bright lights if you have to, Carl.
Give
your daughter a good interrogation. And if you don't get any more information, then suspect the gauge.
Will do.
See you later.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Eva from San Antonio, Texas.
Eva?
Eva, that's right.
Like Zsa Zsa and Eva Gabor.
That would be it. My problem is that my car loves to whistle. And would you like me to make the sound for you?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Here I go. Well, the problem is it happens when I run the air conditioning. So I was wondering if you all know what's going on. I took it to the dealership, and they've never found what was causing the whistle.
Did they hear the whistle?
They said they drove the car. They did not hear the whistle.
So they think you're nuts.
They do, but everyone who's driven with me hears the whistle.
And the whistling is coming from the dashboard.
Around the dashboard, yes.
Could I be so presumptuous as to suggest it's coming from where the heater controls are?
Well, let me tell you, I really tried to listen, but being that I'm a teacher, I'm used to filtering out irritating sounds. So my hearing has somewhat been impaired through
my
job.
And you still listen to this show? You're losing your skills.
I love this show. So it is behind the dash, but the actual, you know, the actual point of the sound emission, I don't know.
You don't know.
And have you ever been able to get rid of the sound by moving any of the controls?
Well, let me tell you, the only way I can get rid of it is to turn the air off. It's a 95 neon. And it's
just that's a 95 neon.
Is that the problem?
No.
No, I just noticed that we had never asked you what kind of a car. I just assumed it was a Suburban. You were from Texas.
Oh, well, you know, I really stick out in the crowd, let me tell you. But I call it a company car because that's about all I can afford with the job I do. We all have them.
Well, I've got to think that it could be the heater control that's faulty. And
I'm going to agree with my brother on this. I know I am.
The heater control?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it works in a neon, but most cars run all that stuff by using engine vacuum.
Okay.
And they use the natural vacuum created by the motion of the pistons to do work, like open and close little doors and whatever. So when you turn the air conditioner on or the defroster or whatever, you're moving things around by means of things called vacuum motors.
Okay.
And if one of them is faulty, you will get a...
All right.
I think since all your friends have heard the sound...
Yeah.
...that you got to bring it back to the guy and... insist that the whistle is there.
Okay.
And sit with him, and he'll finally say, "Oh, you mean that whistle? I thought that was somebody in the back seat." And then you say, "Yeah, that whistle." He'll stick his head underneath the dashboard.
And you'll never see him again.
And then you can boot him in the butt. And then he'll say, "Ah, yeah, it's right here." He'll bang something with his fist, and it'll be fixed.
Yeah, I doubt that, but when he tells you how much it costs to fix it, you'll decide that you can live with it.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
See you, Eva.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Bob from Alexandria, Virginia.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Are you a lawyer or a politician?
No comment.
Okay. We'll talk to you anyway.
Okay,
he might be.
Bob.
He might be both.
We can't tell you whether the answer we're going to give you is for sure, for maybe, or for baloney. let's continue.
Okay, the problem is I have this Fiat.
Yeah? A Spider?
Yes.
Yeah.
1982, and it has two problems. I think they're related. Every time I turn on the lights, the engine stalls. And every time I put on the brakes, the turn signals don't work.
Oh, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, they are related.
Yeah, I just got the car back from the shop. Had it repainted and everything, and it didn't do it before then, and now it's doing it now.
I used to have this very car.
Really?
He never had these problems because his headlights nor his brake lights ever worked. So he couldn't have had these problems. I mean, my first reaction when you say you turn the headlights on, in fact, we used this as a puzzler years ago. You're driving along at night, the thing begins to run lousy. The engine's missing. You turn the headlights off, and the thing runs fine.
Yes.
And the reason that would happen is that your charging system is not working. In other words, the alternator is not producing enough current to run the headlights and the spark plug.
I checked the voltage in the ignition system, and it seems to be fine, lights on or lights off.
What do you mean? What are you checking? At the battery?
At the coil.
Oh, forget the coil.
No. The coil ain't going to tell you
anything. Do you got at the coil? You got 12 volts, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not good enough.
Actually, a little higher than that, like 13 or something.
Well, you should have 14.
Yeah.
But 13...
He's got it. That's what he's got. He's a lawyer. You want 14? Yes, 14. Never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
So, then your other symptom is a classic.
Yeah.
Because the little flasher relay that actuates the directionals...
Mm-hmm.
Is very voltage sensitive. In fact, in many cases, the signal that there's something wrong with your charging system is that your directionals stop flashing or they go very, very slowly.
Tell us about the accident.
There was no accident. I just got it repainted, and he took off all the trim and the taillights and the headlights.
How bad was the rust?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah,
a lot of rust.
See, this is rust. Your problem is ground.
Uh-huh.
And I think what happened is when he disconnected stuff, he disturbed
the delicate balance of rust.
The delicate balance of electrons, which were able to get from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
I would run myself a nice heavy ground strap from the engine to the body of the car.
Yeah.
And I'd also run another ground from even the firewall to the negative terminal of the battery. And in doing so, you might be able to provide a nice, clean path for the electrons to get back to the battery, and you might solve all these problems.
You will solve all these problems.
Yeah.
How do you like the car?
Oh, it's a great car.
See, I sold my Fiat to Joe Weisenfelder from Cars.com, and he hasn't spoken to me since.
But his lawyer has a few times.
You may remember, a couple of years ago, when I sold it to him, we had a bet going that if he made it all the way back home, which was Chicago, that he would pay me the full amount. Otherwise, he would pay me some proportion of my asking price, which was $22,000. Depending on the proportion of the 1,000 miles that he made it.
Uh-huh.
And he was honest because he paid me the whole $22,000 because he made it all the way. Nothing fell off. No pieces fell off. But Joe decided to rebuild this car, and it has never run since. It's now in a box.
Yeah, and it wasn't $22,000. Lira.
Oh, lira! It was
hey,
lira.
See you, Bob. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Thanks for the tip. Appreciate it.
Right, bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Crotch Chafe of Belleville Green. David came back from a very long bike ride recently. Carly High Voltage Nix and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Michaela Ross. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Point Reyes, Roasted Maize, Spare Rib Braise, Donut Glaze, Frito-Lays, Mayonnaise, Vitamin K, Summer Days, Grab and Graze, John Bugs and Wallet. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our physical therapist is Estelle Hoitz. Our staff naturalist is Deirdre Oppings. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our anger management coach is Violet Temper. Our bail bondswoman is Frida Wander. Our luncheon chef is Hannah Mia Kenatuna. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. And our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the grouchy summer school students in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Get a podcast of this very show, which is number 1123. Download classic Car Talk episodes or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, how to maximize your gas mileage.
Yes, suddenly people are very interested in this topic, so we've made a list of all the ways you can make a gallon of gas go farther.
I have my own method.
Yeah, own a car that doesn't start.
Bingo.
Well, we also have some practical tips for saving fuel, and you can see them all right now over at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though motivational speakers are struck dumb whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.